The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Inspiring interviews with today's top landlords. This is the Rental Income Podcast. And now, Dan Lane.
When my guest on the podcast today got the idea that he wanted to buy rental properties, he had a problem. He didn't have much money. And the only property he could afford was a really cheap property in a really bad neighborhood. I mean, this neighborhood was really, really bad. Most new investors should probably stay away from this type of property. They generally look really good on your spreadsheet, but in reality, they almost never work out the way that you project they're going to work out. Well, my guest went for it, and an amazing thing happened. It actually worked out. So on the show today, we're going to see what happened, what kind of challenges he ran into, and hear his story. Joining us on the show today from Des Moines, Iowa, is Chase Keller. We'll take a really quick break. We'll thank our sponsors. We'll come right back and we'll meet Chase. The first step in buying a rental property is to get pre-qualified. And I would suggest you work with a lender that specializes in working with investors, because the last thing you want to have happen is to get to closing and find out the money's not there and you can't close. The lender that I recommend is Chaley Ridge from Ridge Lending Group. She's a nationwide lender and she'll pre-qualify you for free if you mention Rental Income Podcast. Find out more today. Contact Chaley at ridgelendinggroup.com. That's R-I-D-G-E, lendinggroup.com. And MLS 42056. It can be a real challenge to stay organized and keep track of all your rental income and expenses for tax time. Most people end up with a pile of receipts that you need to sort through and make sense of. I want to let you know about an easier way. It's a software that I use called Rental Hero. It was built specifically for rental property owners. They have a really easy-to-use web portal as well as an app where you can easily input all your income and expenses. You can take pictures of receipts and you're done with the paper receipts for good. They have a free 30-day trial. You can try it out. No credit card required. If you don't like it, there's nothing to cancel. Just go to rentaltrial.com. That's rentaltrial, T-R-I-A-L.com. You had just graduated from college. I'm assuming you probably didn't have a lot of money, but you wanted to invest in rental properties. How did you do it? How did you first get started?
Yeah, so my story is fairly unique. I graduated from college, and I was living in New York, living in Manhattan, and somehow I was able to save up a little bit of money. It was about $35,000 when I moved back to Iowa, and I knew that that wasn't going to go very far, so immediately I knew I wanted to start buying some rental property. I knew I was very capable on the renovation side, so I sort of wanted to throw all of that money towards the renovation. I got pretty creative and I found somebody that was looking to sell a group of properties. There's a group of 10 units that was in pretty rough shape. Out of the 10, only 4 were even habitable and barely even that. So I was able to do a lease option, putting no money down to him, but making payments. And I threw all of my money, practically every dime that I had, into this renovation. Spent nights, weekends, everything I had to fix it up. I got tenants in there. And once they were in for a little bit, then the bank saw that there was actually some potential there. There was some value. There's really good income. And luckily, I was able to actually get financing on that for 100% of that purchase, pay off the guy that I bought it through a lease option. And then I had enough left over, enough equity, that I was able to buy another house completely cash and have the money to renovate that one. And as you as you can tell there, it just kind of started the snowball.
Yeah.
Once I had that one renovated and got a tenant in there, after a little bit, I put financing on that and just bought the next one and kept moving on and growing that way.
I love the creativity. I mean, so you didn't have a lot of money, but you just figured out a way. You did that lease option at first and figured out a way to get started. And I congratulate you on that, because a lot of people might just think, well, I can't invest because I don't have enough money. But that's great that you figured it out. Now, tell me about the neighborhood that first property was in.
Yeah, I don't know if you could necessarily, if there is an F, I would put it there.
Okay.
But naturally, I think the D is kind of the lowest that we go.
Okay.
There's not, I wouldn't say it's like a war zone, but is close to a war zone as a small town in Iowa can get.
Okay. So, you know, a lot of times with those types of properties, the numbers look really good on paper, but it doesn't end up panning out that way, that you're not dealing with the most stable tenants, so you maybe have more turnover. Those tenants are sometimes rougher on properties. Was that your experience? Like, was it tough managing the properties, or the doors?
Yes, it's definitely very tough. And one of the good and bad things is life is very interesting when you own that type of property. Every day is different. You have lots of turnover. You have lots of a lot of babysitting is probably the best term that I can put on it. A lot of headaches, a lot of drama between tenants and what's going on and their neighbors, and even drama with police getting calls. We've had, I don't know, 3 drive-by shootings. I've had a triple homicide. I've had multiple drug raids. So it's a very interesting type of property, of tenant base. And that it does make money. So I don't want to say that that you can't make money. And actually, you for dollar, you can make a lot more than you can on a nice type of property. The issue is the time and the headaches that go into it. If you love drama and that's what you live for, that's probably a decent route to go. If you want to do other things with your life, then that may not be the right path for everybody.
Right. So did you have just constant headaches and just constant, did it seem like every day there was something going on that you had to get involved with?
Yeah, and part of that's just with the number of units that we had too. So for most of my career, if you want to call it that, I've self-managed. I've been through a few different property managers, and that's a headache by itself. Not that there aren't good managers out there, but good managers typically don't want to manage this type of property.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So the managers that are available for this type of property are somewhat similar to the tenants. I mean, there's always a tenant for every type of property. If you have really, really crappy property, you're probably going to have crappy tenants and crappy property managers. So,
right. Now, what about getting contractors? Because I imagine a good contractor isn't going to want to go into that kind of neighborhood. Did you have trouble finding contractors that would be reliable and do a good job for you?
Yes. You can find contractors very easily, but are they the type of contractors that you want actually working on the property?
Mm-hmm.
And there's multiple parts to that. So yes, the neighborhoods by itself, good contractors don't want to be there, working when it's getting rough out, possibility of tools getting stolen, that fun stuff.
Okay.
But also the level of the property is not that I run slums by any means, but I don't need them to look like Taj Mahals, and I don't have the ability, I don't have the margin to be able to fix something up really nice. And most of the good contractors have a lot of pride in their work, and they're only going to work at the top of their level and don't really care to drop down and there again, drop down the prices in order to fit that product type.
The other properties that you bought, so you said you bought this, the first 10 unit property, and then you leverage the equity into of that to buy more properties. The more properties you bought, were they also D and F type properties? Like, were you staying on that lower end?
For a few years, yes. I was very much in the mindset of staying on that type of property and produce a lot more cash flow than what a nicer property could.
So at the end of the day, like when you're looking back at the end of the year, like I know you've got months where like there's probably not much going on. There's not a lot of repairs. There's not a lot of turnovers. I'm sure there's months where it's really profitable. But then do you have bad months when you end up giving that money right back into fixing the property back up? So at the end of the year, are you actually making money?
So at the end of the year, I've definitely made money. A big part of that is because I self-managed for most of my career and I was swinging the hammer myself.
Okay.
So that obviously saves a lot of money. If I was hiring professional licensed contractors and had a property manager, that's definitely true that I would have a significantly less amount of money at the end of the year. I did make a decent amount of money, and all of that went back into buying more property. And that was my main goal. Now, looking back, would I do the same thing all over? I would start in the same spot, and I would do the same first few deals that I did. However, I would move out of that type of property faster than the transition that I did.
Yeah. So now let's talk about this, because I think this is interesting in that first property, it with the first couple of properties, sounded like a lot of work, and things didn't go as smooth as they maybe would have with a better type of property, but you actually ended up making a lot of money when you sold those properties because you bought them right, that you bought these properties way under market value, you fixed them up, you increased the value. So like, tell me how that worked. When you sold the properties, did you get a bunch of money that you used then to put into better types of properties?
Exactly, yeah. So my long-term goal hasn't changed from day one, and that's basically to just buy as many income-producing properties as I can.
Okay.
So we do now some luxury houses, and we do larger apartment complexes. So our product type is very different from what it used to be, and that better product type allows us to have a lot more time and freedom to be able to do the extra projects that I love to do, as opposed to fighting the fires and fighting all the battles that come with the lower income property.
Right. So if the first properties were D's and F's, what grade would you give the current properties you own today?
Most of what I have, and it's a broad range. So I have some, my lower end now would be like a C plus B minus at the lowest. And I do have some A minus as well. So different, they go into different pools, just kind of based on different goals and objectives that we have. But I'm definitely not dipping the C minus in any properties that I do buy in that C plus range are in like B minus B neighborhoods that I'm then fixing up and putting in that value add. So I'm not even looking for the C type of tenant anymore.
Okay. So let's compare, because you've got an interesting perspective in that you've pretty much done it all as far as different classes of properties. So let's kind of compare how things are different. Like, so when you have a turnover with a D property versus a turnover with, say, a B property, how is that different?
The biggest difference is the timing and obviously the cost of what it takes to turn that over. So on the lower class property, you're going to have a lot more repairs. You're going to have to paint more. You're going to have to do cleaning, because a lot of times that type of tenant just doesn't believe in cleaning. Maybe it's just a moral thing. I don't know, but they're, I feel like it takes a lot more work. They're generally rougher on everything, like doorknobs. Personally, I've never broken a doorknob in my life, but somehow 90% of my doors' knobs are broken in between tenants. On a nicer class property, there again, the tenant has, generally speaking, across the time that they live there, they take care of the property. They've been cleaning, and any maintenance issues that do come up while they're there, they let us know. So we're constantly on the ball and we're taking care of those issues. So when that tenant does turn over, there's not a lot that needs to happen. We can do it fairly quickly. We can get in. A lot of times we even have the property rented before the previous tenant is out. And all we have to do is make a couple repairs, do a nice, good, deep cleaning, and it's ready to go within a few days, a week.
Right.
As opposed to it being down for a few weeks, having to do a lot of repairs and not having it rented quite as quickly.
Right. So how long would it take, like, to rent the D-class property? Like, how long would the property be sitting vacant for?
So one of the issues there again is with a nicer property, we can show the unit while the old tenant is in, and we're able to work around that. And we have certain benefits that we give our current tenants before they're out in order to allow us to show it. With the lower class properties, it doesn't happen that way. So we really can't even get into show until after that tenant is out and we've gone through and completely filled it.
Right.
So typically it's, you know, a minimum of a couple weeks. It can take, just depending on the property and how long it takes to rent anyway, but up to a couple months at most.
Are the D-class tenants just not comfortable with people coming in the properties, or is the condition just not good enough that no one's going to want to rent it, seeing how bad of a shape the property is in?
Both.
Okay.
Both are very big. Tenants in those lower class typically are much more scared of us. They feel like we're always on them, and partially that's true. We have a need to babysit them a lot more than the nicer properties, so they're probably good to be a little bit more nervous, so they don't trust the owners quite as much. So it's hard to get in and hard to get that. And yeah, when they're in a bad shape and the tenant hasn't taken care of it or cleaned or has junk all over the place, I don't want to show it.
Sure. Sure. Now, what about screening? So when you're renting a D-class property and you've got a tenant that probably doesn't have the greatest credit score, like, how do you screen them differently than you would screen someone that's in a B-class property where maybe they have a decent credit score and a cleaner background?
Yeah, so the screening is definitely very different. On those lower-class tenants, it was a very short period that we actually even took credit scores because they just – I'm never going to get anything that matters. The biggest thing is finding a tenant. So obviously we have like our minimum standards and we have then higher standards that we're always shooting for. And it's really a matter of like, how close can we get to the target of what we want for a tenant? So there's always issues, whether it's previous evictions, whether it's criminal history, whether it's just not having a job, not having a secure job, switching jobs every couple weeks. So it's very rare that we even find somebody that meets not necessarily our minimum standards, but our goals.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really just kind of a moving target of like, you know, how close can we get? What are we going to give in a little bit on?
Right.
Obviously, we have to have income. We have to be able to prove it. We always try to talk to previous landlords. Sometimes that's very difficult, or you know, they're lying on their application and we can't find it. And sometimes, like, we know they're lying, but everybody lies on their application. So we just have to find out what are we going to slack a little bit,
right,
for these type of properties, which is not a fun way to run a business.
Right, right. Yeah, so you're basically, if you've got five things you're looking for, and you know maybe they meet one or two of them, you maybe will take a chance on them.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Now, with a B-class property, like, how is that different?
That's very different. So we have, obviously, our minimum standard is quite a bit higher. And we very rarely have issues with everybody that we accept actually meeting all of our minimum and then some. So obviously, it's easier to verify their income, actually talk to their landlords. They're not afraid, typically, to give us their actual landlord's information and be able to talk to them. So the whole conversation is a lot easier. We're not necessarily looking for where all are they lying, because we just don't see that
nearly
as often.
Now, let's talk about appreciation. So, you know, I know market appreciation is something you can't always count on. And you mentioned with the D-class properties that they increased in value because of the work you put into it. But with your nicer properties, are you seeing more appreciation?
Yes, absolutely. And that's one of the biggest things. There again, I'm in Iowa, Midwest, very stable. We don't see the big run-ups, but we don't see a big downturn either. We do see some fluctuation, but we're not going to have nearly the fluctuations that a lot of other markets are seeing. With the nicer properties, the nicer areas, you can rely on those prices going up and steadily going up, whether it's, you know, 2-3%, even though it's small, you can count on a fairly good rise. With the lower income properties, there again, 9-10 years ago, when I finished that group of 10 units and got the appraisal, got the financing, that value is going to be very, very similar to what it is today. It will have gone up just based on inflation and just the market cycle that we're in. But you're definitely not, if you're hoping for a big appreciation play with that type of property, you're going to be very disappointed.
Right. Now, you mentioned earlier on that you wanted to be more hands-off with your property. So do you use a property manager today?
I do, yes. Yes,
okay.
Which is always a bit of a struggle, finding the right one. But yeah, everything that I have does have a third-party professional property management on there now. There again, even with the lower income property that we do still own, it takes even some babysitting for that property manager.
Yeah. Now, one thing that I think is really cool is that, so you've taken all the knowledge that you've learned through buying rental properties yourself, and today you're a realtor and you're helping other investors buying rental properties. How did that come to be?
Yeah. So one of the biggest reasons why I jumped over onto the brokerage side is because I believe I'm very good and very passionate about being in the deal flow. I love out hunting for deals. I love running the numbers. I love doing the analysis. I love doing the underwriting. And I can only do that so much for the property that I buy myself. So I love to be able to get in and be able to do that work for other people.
If you're looking to invest in the Des Moines area, definitely reach out to Chase. I think he would be a great resource for you. I've got his contact information on the website. You can find it at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode250. I'd like to thank Chase Lee Ridge from Ridge Lending Group for sponsoring today's episode. If you are looking to buy a rental property, whether it's your first property or you want to add to your portfolio, definitely reach out to Chaley. What I love about Chaley is she's actually an investor herself. She thinks like an investor, and at the same time, she's a mortgage expert, and that is a very rare combination to find in a lender. She has a ton of different loan programs, and Chaley really takes the time to educate you, to make sure that you understand what you're getting into, to make sure you've got the right loan program, and to strategize and figure out whatever goal you're trying to hit, whether it's a certain monthly cash flow or a certain number of properties, to kind of make a roadmap to help you get to where it is you want to go. So definitely reach out to Chailey, and she would be happy to talk to you. I've got her contact information on the website at rentalincomepodcast.com/episode250, or you can just go right to her website at ridgelendinggroup.com. If you mention Rental Income Podcast, she will waive all of the pre-qualification fees. NMLS 42056. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast. If this is your first time here, make sure you subscribe. We've got new interviews every single Tuesday. If you subscribe, you'll get notified as soon as they come out. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.